Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us today for another edition of Garden Talk. And we're pleased to go back on the phone with Jeff Gilman of Maplewood, Minnesota. He's an associate professor in the Department of Horticultural Sciences at the University of Minnesota. He researches plant production, teaches courses on nursery management and pesticide use, and is the author of The Truth About Garden Remedies, What Works, What Doesn't, and Why. It's published by the Timber Press. And Jeff, thanks very much for spending some time with us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me, Jim.
It's good to have you back. I know that you're originally from Pennsylvania, but you did your higher education in Georgia.
That's right, with Mike Durr, who you might be familiar with.
Mm-hmm. You earned a doctorate in horticulture there.
That's right. Got my doctorate in horticulture after receiving actually a master's degree in entomology.
Uh-huh.
I used to like insects, but then I saw the light and moved over to plants.
Well, I see that. And among the talks that you give is one on the use and abuse of pesticides. So your research background has taken you in this direction, I assume.
Yep, I've done a lot of work with pesticides, mostly organic pesticides and also a lot of home-brewed type concoctions. I look at things like vinegar and how well it controls weeds. Also, we've done work with flames, how well the flames control weeds. Done work with Bacillus thuringiensis, which is an insecticide, a natural biological insecticide for controlling caterpillars.
Mm-hmm.
So we've worked on a lot of different things.
All right. If people have questions about remedies that they've heard about or are uncertain about, whether or not something has efficacy or not, you can call us in Madison at 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Of course, that's toll-free. And our email address is talk@wpr.org as we talk with Jeff Gilman about the truth about garden remedies. And I was just paging through the book, and I came upon the section that deals with sound for plants.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the research that's been going on in the past about different kinds of music and whether plants respond to that. Talk about that.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, over the years, a lot of people have wondered whether playing sound would actually help a plant grow. In fact, there's a guy in Minnesota who sells a product called Sonic Bloom, where he blares sound to plants and applies fertilizer at the same time. I've got to tell you, right now there's no compelling evidence that sound necessarily helps plants to grow, but there are all kinds of little studies here and there that seem to point to at least some benefit from sound. One of my favorite books is actually The Sound of Music and Plants by a woman called Dorothy Redilak. It came out in 1972, and it's a really neat book because it talks about her experiments and how she played acid rock for plants. And when she played this acid rock, she called what the plants looked like, or what did she call it, catastrophe.
Now, when you're saying acid rock, you're referring to such groups as Led Zeppelin.
That's right.
Just so that people have some idea of what we're talking about.
That's here. Right, although I got to tell you, I don't think of Led Zeppelin as acid rock anymore. I think they were overemphasizing what Led Zeppelin used to play, but yeah.
And so talk a little bit more about her experiments.
Sure. Well, what she would do is she'd play classical music, Led Zeppelin, or nothing to plants, and then she would see what they looked like. And all in all, she was convinced that classical music benefited the plant's growth, while these harder-edged songs like what Led Zeppelin would play actually led to plants not doing quite as well. Now, there's actually a TV show recently called Mythbusters that did something similar, and what they found is that more sounds, more or heavier rock, actually seem to lead to larger plants. So there's some conflicting evidence there.
And how about your own studies involving a Canadian group?
Sure. When we played Rush for Plants, the plants, well, there was perhaps some benefit, but I would end up calling it, especially thinking back on it now, I would think of it more as inconclusive. We actually were looking at whether stomates, which is the pores on plants, whether these pores opened or shut when we played the music, and we were expecting them to open up, but what we actually saw is that they seemed to shut themselves down when we played the music. So it was kind of interesting.
All right. We've got some callers online who are interested in various kinds of garden remedies, so let's see
sure.
if we can clear up any myths that they may have. If you'd like to join the conversation with Jeff Gilman, the number in Madison is 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 800-642-1234. We'll start off with David in Lyons, and David, go ahead.
Hi, Jeff. Hey, thanks for being on.
Sure.
So I've got two questions. One is, I've been an organic gardener for over 30 years, and I'm particular about that, but what about Miracle-Gro? Is Miracle-Gro organic, or is that some other thing I don't want to use?
Well, I'm actually coming out with a second book, which will be out early next year, called The Truth About Organic Gardening, where I talk about some of the different organic remedies that you can use and how good or bad they are. Miracle-Gro, you know, thinking to its ingredients right now, and it's not something I personally use a lot, that's going to be synthetic. The nitrogen in something like Miracle-Gro is going to come from something called the Haber-Bosch reaction. What actually happens is it takes nitrogen out of the air and reacts it with natural gas to make ammonia, and then that ammonia is made into various fertilizers. So it's going to be synthetic. Whether it's bad for your plants is question. It's not bad for your plants. It's good for your plants. But it's not going to be, strictly speaking, organic because the nitrogen is reacted with natural gas.
Okay. Besides my plants, is it good for me?
Miracle-Gro? Well, Miracle-Gro is not going to be bad for you. The plant is going to take up nitrogen as ammonium or nitrate, one or the other. Doesn't matter whether you feed that plant organic nitrogen or, you know, organic or nitrogen that comes from animal manure or from Miracle-Gro. The plant's going to take up the nitrogen exactly the same. It's not going to affect you any differently one way or the other.
Oh, okay, good.
Thanks. All right, David, thanks very much. We appreciate your call and bringing up the topic. Let's go to Eleanor next in Milwaukee on Garden Talk. Hello, Eleanor.
Good morning. I'm calling because I got a little thing with a towel that I had bought. And it was about George Washington's Garden of Herbs. And one of the things he says is lining the vegetable beds with herbs also helped to ward off predators such as rabbits and insects, which were repelled by the pungent aromas. So I'm wondering how adequate that really is, because we have a rabbit problem.
Oh, man, getting rid of rabbits, let me tell you. Okay, first of all, that is... Washington has some excellent advice there. It's something that organic gardeners use to this day, which is mixing it up. And when I say mixing it up, it's not so much that he used herbs, it's that he used many different plants. And by using many different plants, you repel insects and, you know, mammals, because they see some things that they're attracted to and some things that they're not attracted to. And just mixing it up is going to protect some things. The best way to get control of rabbits is going to be to actually put up a fence around your garden. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. And the fence is going to have to go pretty deep. You know, you'd like to get it a foot underground if you can. You'd like to get it 3 or 4 feet high if you can. Now,
there's a series of gardens plots in this big garden which we have here at the apartment. And so putting a fence around one individual plot is a little...
going to be difficult.
Inconvenient, and so my thinking is I can't grow peas and beans.
Well, let me give you some other possibilities, and unfortunately it's just very difficult. There are repellents which work reasonably well. Hot pepper sauce, things that include eggs in them. Egg sprays are usually pretty useful. Those are going to help repel the rabbits. Their biggest downfall is that they're not going to last for that long. They're going to last a few weeks, and in the middle of the winter here, it's tough to get out and spray things again. Of course, if you're dealing with stuff, you know, you're talking about a garden at an apartment, so you're going to be dealing with stuff mostly over the summer. Some hot pepper spray or sprays that include eggs in them, they call them putrescent egg solids if you're buying a commercial spray, Those are going to work pretty well, but they will take reapplication. You're going to have to put them down frequently, every 2 to 3 weeks probably.
All right, Eleanor.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck to you. Thanks very much. I appreciate hearing from you. We're talking today with Jeff Gilman of Maplewood, Minnesota. He's an associate professor in the Department of Horticultural Sciences at the University of Minnesota. Has a book that came out last year, The Truth About Gardening about Garden Remedies, What Works, What Doesn't, and Why. It's published by the Timber Press. And in spring, he'll come out with a second book that deals with organic gardening practices and tell you what works and what doesn't. Mike in Delavan, let's go to you next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Happy holidays to you guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Yeah, I was just wondering, we were talking about music and how, you know, they're wondering if it influences plants. I was wondering if they used any kind of natural music, like songbirds, you know, sounds of nature, you know, whistling trees and things of that nature, to see if that stimulates the plants.
That's a good question. And there was a study done in the later, earlier 90s, and it was looking at wheat. And they looked at the effects of wind, exactly what you're talking about, without actual wind being there. So you'd look at the sounds of wheat rustling and see what that does to the stomates on the plant, or the openings on the plant, which the plant breathes through, collects carbon dioxide through. And what they generally found is that with these sounds, you would find a reduced opening in stomates, and theoretically that would be because the plant wouldn't want to lose water to the wind. It would lose a lot of water if its stomates were open while there was a windy day. So that's a good question, and that's the only study that I know of that looks at that at all.
Well, thank you.
All right, Mike, thanks very much. We appreciate hearing from you. 263-1890 is the number in Madison. Elsewhere, toll-free, it's 1-800-642-1234. And email addresses are talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Ann in Duluth. And Ann, what's on your mind today?
Hello. I am wondering about the watering cans that are advertised that plug in and generate bubbles and then supposedly oxygenate the water, which is apparently provides nitrogen and is good for plants. Do you know anything about those, and are they worth the exorbitant price?
I sure do know about them. There's actually a professor in this department, Dr. Bud Markard, who works with this. And I got to tell you, I was pretty skeptical about that particular product, and then I talked with Bud. Let me tell you what happens. Basically, water is made up of hydrogen and oxygen. And when you put an electrical charge into water, you can actually split up water molecules into hydrogen and oxygen, and the oxygen will dissolve in the water. When the oxygen dissolves in the water, it can be beneficial to some plants. All plants need oxygen around their roots. Okay, that's why you need a well-aerated container. So that oxygen can get down through the media and to the roots. So the oxygen is good for the roots. The question is whether this type of watering can is going to offer more oxygen than the plant could get anyway with a typical well-drained media. And the answer is that in some cases, yes, it can. So in some cases, it is good. And, you know, the next question is, well, what cases? And the truth is that I don't know exactly. I know that there are some annuals that do seem to respond better. I believe that I'm thinking violets are one of the ones that did respond better. Some plants will respond better, and some plants won't. And off the top of my head, I'm not remembering which ones respond better. I don't know the price they're charging, so I can't tell you whether it's worth the exorbitant price.
I think they're around $80.
Okay.
I'm getting one for Christmas, so tell me that it's a great item.
I'm going to tell you that it will benefit some of your plants.
Okay. Where can I find out which ones might benefit most?
Honestly, I don't know, but you could type in Bud Markert's name into a search engine, and probably some of his research will come up. And his last name would be spelled, let me make sure I get this name right before I before I tell it to you.
Okay.
M-A-R-K-H-A-R-T. And that's Bud, B-U-D, Markhart. And you should be able to find at least some of his research into that online.
Great.
All right. Thank you very much, Ann. Good luck to you. We appreciate hearing from you. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller as we talk about the truth about garden remedies with Jeff Gilman, who is an associate professor in the Department of Horticultural Sciences at the University of Minnesota, here on the Ideas Network. It's a foggy Friday in southern Wisconsin. I don't know about you, but I would imagine that you want to slow down a bit and allow for a little extra time as you're out traveling around. We're talking on Garden Talk with Jeff Gilman of Maplewood, Minnesota, about his book, The Truth About Garden Remedies. Jeff, again, thanks very much for spending time with us today.
Well, it's great to be here. And by the way, can we get back to that oxygenated water for just a second?
Yes, indeed.
Because, you know, having a couple of minutes to look through my papers here, the plants that benefited from the oxygenated water included petunias, peppers, and it looks like tomatoes. And geraniums, too. So there are four things that did benefit from the oxygenated water. I would say that some things that would probably benefit less would include your trees. Probably they wouldn't benefit as much, and your larger shrubs.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to the phones. We have callers who are waiting, and Pat in Appleton is next. Oh, I guess she couldn't stay with us. Let's go to Roman then in Wausau. Hello, Roman.
Hello.
Yes.
I've got just a very small garden. I've been struggling to try and grow tomatoes and different things, but so many tree roots have invaded my little patch. So I decided this year, last year I put in asparagus and rhubarb, and I sure hope those two go well together. But my question would be, this spring, I know I don't dare to harvest, I'm sure, either, but what fertilizers would work well, if anything, that I could throw around? And I do have a bag of dicalcium phosphate in the garage that if that'll work on there, I'll use it. Otherwise, I might as well get rid of that because I'm not going to be gardening. So that's my one question. But then I just may want to make a comment. I've got one really nice apple tree, Fireside Delicious, and I'm glad to hear you're an organic gardener. I found to control these moth-like critters that plant the eggs that cause the worms, apparently I use 1 gallon jugs that I carve a little door in, and with vinegar, sugar, and a banana peel, and water. I've been trapping a lot of those moths, and not as many are getting to my apples. So I just thought I'd pass that on to a lot of folks. It takes about four times the water that you put vinegar and sugar, and just stir it up and throw a banana peel in it, and the pleasant odor, I guess, attracts these moths, and they drown in there, and it prevents a lot of the problem. But I'll just hang up and listen for your answer.
All right, Roman, thank you very much for the call.
All right, well, with the jugs, which include vinegar, banana peel, I've had a lot of people talk about those as ways to catch harmful insects. And I guess that I come from a little bit of a different direction with that particular method. You see, the thing is that you do catch some pests, and you may see a reduction for a short time in your probably what you're dealing with is apple maggots, which get into your apples and hurt them. The problem is that you end up catching beneficial insects as well. You're going to catch a lot of different insects in these particular jugs, and some of these insects are going to be bad, and some of these insects are going to be good. So I don't think it's a bad thing to do, but I'm not convinced that it's necessarily a good thing to do either at this particular point. Certainly something to try if you want to try something different. Now, in terms of fertilizers, the calcium and phosphorus in that particular fertilizer that you have probably isn't what you need. Probably what you need is a little bit more nitrogen. Composted manure is one option, but another one which might be attractive to you would be corn gluten meal, which is used right now for controlling weeds in turf. It's also used for controlling weeds in gardens. in the garden, but the truth is that it also provides a good deal of nitrogen for your plants. So I actually like the idea of using corn gluten meal as a fertilizer for your plants. It's good, natural, and gives you the extra nitrogen that you may need.
And he did take his answer off the air, so good answers, Roman. I hope you can follow up on that. Our guest today on Garden Talk is Jeff Gilman of Maplewood, Minnesota. He is an associate professor in the Department of Horticultural Sciences at the University of Minnesota, and we're talking about his book, The Truth About Garden Remedies, and if you have questions about fertilizers and other amendments, about biostimulants, insecticides, fungicides, disease control, herbicides, pesticides, and concoctions to be avoided, then give us a call. The number in Madison, 263-1890, or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jerry in Abrams next. Hello, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Happy holidays. Great show.
Thank you.
I got a comment and a question. Comment, that lady that was trying to keep rabbits out. My grandmother has always planted marigolds around her gardens. Mm-hmm. And they swore it worked, but I actually have a fence myself because we have deer as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't 100% guarantee it. But anyhow, I've been digging out a pond that my father and I dug like 30 years ago, and there's a lot of black organic matter in the pond, like mm-hmm. decayed cattails and
sure.
weeds and organic peat moss. So I was wondering, would that be really rich in nitrogen or too rich to grow garden and plants in?
Sure. It shouldn't be too rich. I would not grow a plant directly in that. However, if you wanted to spread that on your garden and till it in, it would probably make a really nice amendment, and it wouldn't just be nitrogen. You'd also get some phosphorus, potassium. You'd get some good stuff, you know, just all in all. It also provide some nice aeration, give you maybe even better drainage. Good amendment, probably don't want to grow plants directly into it.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, and as far as the marigolds go, Jeff, what's your thoughts there?
You know, that's not one that I've heard of, but it makes sense. You know, having said that, I don't like to recommend things that I haven't tried or have no experience with,
uh-huh.
but it does make sense.
All right, let's go to Sheila in Blanchardville. Hello, Sheila, what's on your mind today?
Hi there. Hi, guys.
Hi.
It's nice to think of gardening in the middle of winter, but I have a really great producing garden patch, vegetable gardens and pumpkin patch, but I'm 5'2", and the weeds were taller than I was by the end of summer, and I'm looking for some ways to maybe prep the gardens, trying to keep it natural or organic. I'm not completely committed to organic, but as natural as possible. We do have horses, so we can use that to mix in.
Sure.
I just got to find a way to cut down on weeds.
Okay. Well, first of all, my number one recommendation would be mulch. I mean, mulch is going to help you out a lot if you can get that. Now, I don't think that horse manure is your best idea for mulch, and the reason for that is simply health issues. If you compost the manure, it's better, but then it's not very good mulch because just about anything's going to grow into it. So the horse manure, if it's composted, makes a nice amendment for the ground to make plants grow better, but in terms of weed control, it's not going to cut it. What you could use is mulch, hardwood mulch I happen to like. It's going to keep weeds down, not that you won't have some escape, some weeds come through, but in general it's going to do a pretty good job. There's also corn gluten meal, which I've mentioned previously. It's also going to provide some fertility to the plants that you want to grow, and it's going to retard the growth of your weeds. Now, here's the thing with corn gluten meal. It'll probably take you 2 to 3 years of application for that corn gluten meal to really work as well as you want it to work, and you will need to spread it relatively thick, about 10 pounds per 1,000 square feet. So that's a relatively heavy application of that stuff. If you want to use a pre-emergent herbicide, you can use a pre-emergent herbicide, but then you are getting away from organic. The pre-emergent herbicides are relatively safe, but I don't like them that much. The one that most people use is Preen. Preen works pretty well, but again, you're getting into stuff that there may be some health issues with.
Well, I mean, I still produced a lot. And
yeah.
After a while, I just gave up and said, well, I can still get food out of it.
Yeah. Well, do you do any cutting down of trees or anything like that with chainsaws? Are you?
Well, we're near by woods, and I'm sure people would let us take some or down trees. We can cut them up, yeah.
Yeah, so if you can get sawdust can actually work pretty well as a mulch to control weeds. And by the end of the year, that sawdust will break down and till it back in. It'll make a really nice amendment for your soil.
So I would work up the garden, and then in between rows put the sawdust down as to block.
Right, exactly. You could use that.
I did that with grass clippings all year, but it still didn't quite do it.
Grass clippings isn't going to work quite as well. It's not. It composts pretty quickly, and
sure.
This won't work quite as well.
All right, Sheila. Well, good luck to you in your garden this spring. Hope the prep goes well for you. Let's go to Scott next in Milwaukee. Scott, what can we do for you today?
Good morning, gentlemen. I am a sort of an amateurish home brewer, and I end up with spent grain after a batch of beer. I've been throwing, it's maybe 10 pounds at a time. I've been throwing the spent grain into the garden and then mixing it up in the springtime. Is that doing any harm?
Not doing any harm, and it's doing a lot of good. One of my hobbies is reading old garden magazines and old production magazines. One of the things that they used to do is actually take the, in particular, the spent hops. And spent hops was considered just a fantastic fertilizer and was really sought after as a fertilizer. We're talking about the 1880s, 1890s here.
Right.
So, no, what you're doing is it's really good for your garden.
Oh, good.
Go ahead.
It'll help me sell the hobby to my wife.
There you go.
Well, happy holidays to you.
All right.
And
thanks very much, Scott. We appreciate hearing from you. And if you'd like to join the conversation with a question on Garden Talk, the number in Madison is 263-1890, and we're toll-free at 800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Had a question from a caller wondering about Tuckahoe. Are you familiar with Tuckahoe?
No, how's it spelled?
It's spelled to me as T-U-C-K-A-H-O-E, and when I Googled Tuckahoe, I came up with a Chinese firm offering a number of various extracts of things.
I'm not familiar with it. So you can name particular extracts. I am familiar with a number of different extracts, but I'm not familiar with the company, and you know, I'd need to be told the extract before I could comment on it.
Okay. That answers that question. Let's go next then to Bethany, and Bethany's in North Freedom. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about scale for you. I have a plumeria plant that has scale, and I was wondering if there were any home remedies for scale.
Okay. For controlling scale, there are... Okay, so you have a single plant with scale. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Just one... All right. What are the chances of picking the scale off by hand?
It's pretty inundated with the scale.
Okay.
Not very good.
Then here is a remedy which I have not tried myself, but which some people say works quite well. So I'm going to give it to you, and you can give it a shot. Then I'm going to give you a second remedy, which is definitely non-organic. I think is not the greatest, but I'm also pretty sure it's going to work. Take a cotton ball, put some isopropyl alcohol on it, and wipe it over a small section of the plant and see how it controls the scale on that area. Wait 2 to 3 days to see what happens. And the reason I want you to do it on just a small area is that you could have some damage to the plant, and if it does damage the plant, you don't want to damage the whole plant. You know, you just want to damage a small. That's why you're doing just a small place. And also you want the 2 or 3 days. That's about how long it's going to take to find out whether you're controlling the scales at all.
Okay.
Scales don't, you don't kill them and they drop off. You hurt them and then you wait for them to, they may fleck off. You know, you may actually want to touch them to see if they fall off after you do that.
Okay.
And then there are some compounds out there which I consider quite dangerous, which include... Disulfiton. These are extremely toxic products.
Oh, okay.
They're not for playing around, but you can find them.
Okay.
You'll find them in, like, rose spikes, rose fertilizer spikes. You may have mm-hmm. seen or heard of those.
Mm-hmm.
You apply those as granules to your soil. With watering, they'll go into the soil. They'll be taken up by the plant, and your plant will become a toxic mess, and things that are feeding on your plant will fall off dead.
Okay.
So if you use those, be extremely careful. Don't use them around pets. Don't use them around kids. You stay away from them yourself except for the application. Use gloves when you wear them. Read the label carefully.
Okay. I have one more question. It is in a dormant stage right now. Is that going to affect it?
So you have it dormant. Is this inside or outside?
It's inside right now, but I left it out until the weather got down to 40 degrees, so it went dormant.
Okay. That won't make a big difference. You can try, since it's gone dormant, you can try an oil on it, and an oil isn't something I recommend for an actively growing plant, but you can buy summer spray oil, and even that I don't usually recommend for an actively growing plant, but you can try the summer spray oil, apply it to the plant, and that may suffocate the scale. So that gives you an additional treatment option. But again, I'd be kind of careful with the oil. It can damage the plant.
Okay, well, I'll try the first recommendation first.
All right.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you, Bethany. Good luck to you. And on we go to Adam in Milwaukee next. Hi, go ahead, Adam.
Hi. I was just calling because I was curious about a product called neem oil.
Yes.
And because I do, like, indoor growing of, like, peppers and stuff, and I've had problems with aphids. So I've heard that and maybe in a combination with, like, a soap or something like that can work really well.
Okay, could you back up a second? I didn't hear what you said you had problems with.
Aphids.
Aphids,
like,
okay.
Stuff? Yeah.
All right.
And then also a couple other products, like a nicotine extract or, like, vermiculture tea, I was also kind of curious about.
Sure, I can talk to all of those. Let's start with neem. Neem has some efficacy against insects, but for aphids, I think that the better product is going to be a simple insecticidal soap. If you want to try making your own soap with or your own soap spray with a couple of tablespoons of Palmolive or Ivory or whatever you've got, whatever dish soap you've got laying around, a couple of tablespoons and a gallon of water and spraying that out, it's a good idea. And I found that to be extremely effective against aphids. But having said that, some plants will be damaged by it, so you want to be very careful. But that tends to work really well, and I think that works as well as neem in most cases. This past summer, we actually tried using neem against diseases, and we found that it worked okay, but it didn't actually work better than spraying a regular old horticultural oil, so just an oil on the plant. So neem seems to work as an oil, you know, as much as because it has insecticidal or fungicidal properties. So again, I think the insecticidal soap is probably a better choice. Also with neem, it's advertised as being safe, but I've read some papers recently where I'm not convinced that it's as safe as it's advertised, and I think I'll stop there, but I don't think it's as safe as advertised.
Okay.
Second of all, you asked about nicotine. Stay away from it. It's dangerous. Organic producers aren't even allowed to use the stuff. Nicotine is a poison. It's toxic. It's Blackleaf 40, which was a commercial nicotine spray, hasn't been legal for years now. I just think that it's a bad direction to go. Back in the days when they used to mix up nicotine and chewing tobacco, and this was the way that they controlled insects in the garden, they would actually mix up a pound of tobacco per gallon of water. That's a lot of tobacco. Again, I'd stay away from it. Vermicompost tea. Okay. For disease that's in the ground, there is some evidence that that might work. I can tell you for sure that it's going to offer some fertility to your plant. If you add sugar to that vermicompost, I don't think it's a good idea because you can have organisms growing which you don't want to grow. So I think you need to be careful with that. But if you're looking for something that may help with diseases in the soil and with fertilization, then your vermicompost team might be a good idea. If you're looking for controlling diseases on the plant leaves, I think you should search somewhere else. That's what I know about vermicompost tea.
Okay.
All right. Adam, thanks very much. We appreciate your call. And if you'd like to join in, we'll have a line open. In Madison, the number is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Jeff Gilman is the author of The Truth About Garden Remedies, What Works, What Doesn't, and Why. It's published by the Timber Press. More about that at timberpress.com. And later this spring, he'll have a book coming out about organic gardening practices as well. So it's a pleasure to have him with us today. And let's go to Linda and see what's on her mind. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I'm wondering where you get the cornmeal gluten from.
Corn gluten meal.
Corn gluten meal, okay.
That's okay. You're over there in Wisconsin, right? So you just drive down to Iowa, and they'll load you up with anything to do with corn.
You can't just buy it from a feed mill or something.
No, I'm just kidding.
He's just kidding with you.
Okay.
Yeah. You can find it from some feed mills, or most garden center stores do sell it at this point. So if you go to a garden center, you should be able to find it. Even some of the big box stores like Walmart are starting to carry it now. You might check Home Depot. I think I saw it in Home Depot a month or so ago.
Okay, one other question. What about vinegar for weed control? Can you use the regular strength, or do you have to get the more than 5%?
You don't have to get more than 5%. When you buy vinegar off the shelves, you're going to find it any place from about 4% to 6%. Usually, I mean, it can be a little higher or lower than that. And I've tested at about 5%, and white vinegar off the shelf, you know, the cheap stuff, at 5% works just fine. Here's one caveat that I want to add to that. Even if you buy vinegar at 20% acetic acid, all it's going to do is kill the part of the plant it touches. And this really irritates some people because they'll put it onto a plant, and it'll burn off the top of the plant, and they'll think it's dead, but the plant has a strong root system, and it resprouts. So when you're using the vinegar, just be aware that all you're killing is the part that you're seeing. If it's a small plant with a weak root system, you are going to kill the whole plant. If the plant has a large, strong root system, that plant's going to come right back. Poison ivy is the wrong plant to try and kill with vinegar. It's going to come right back on you, even though you killed the top.
What about repeated applications?
You can do repeated application. With something like poison ivy, you're probably talking 4 or 5 repeated applications.
Okay.
But yes, you can. If you're willing to do the repeated application, it's going to work fine for you.
Good.
All right, Linda, thanks very much. We're talking today with Jeff Gilman, The Truth About Garden Remedies, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you with us today for another edition of Garden Talk. Larry is returning this weekend from a week in Paris, where he has been telling UNESCO how to spend its money on some programs, and or at least offering his advice. And he'll be back because Monday we have the arrival of Santa Claus for his annual visit with the children of Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. So that'll be Monday between 11 and 12:30. Santa, one of his elves, coming along. It'd be a lot of fun, and we hope that you'll be listening as well. Let's go back to the phones, and Terry is next in Green Bay. Hello, Terry.
Hello. Good morning to you.
Thank
you. Good morning.
First, I'd like to make a comment on the past caller that suggested using marigolds for rabbits. I've seen them eat marigolds. I think it's it has something to do with the individual bunny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But what I'd like to ask Jeff is, have you had any experience using the liquid plant food or fertilizer called Follett's Watch Us Grow out of Door County?
I have not. I don't know what it is.
Okay. It's a liquid plant food. It was developed, I think, back in the early 50s by old Mr. Follett. He's passed away since, but it's still marketed out of Door County, out of Egg Harbor. It's a 888 balance, and it's a foliant, or also whatever goes into the soil is taken up by the roots. And I was just wondering if you've done any, you know, any usage at all of it.
Nope, I don't even know what it is. I don't. unless I know what it consists of, I can't even speak to it, really.
Is it spelled F-O-L-L-E-T-S?
Yes, Follett's.
Okay, Follett's fertilizer. So, Jeff, if you want to check that out, why that would be the way to go. Thank you very much, Terry. Sorry we don't have an answer for you. On to Cindy in Ashland. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I was wondering, I have a problem with little black flies in my house plants, and I use a spray-on solution of a tablespoon of dish soap, a tablespoon of oil, and a couple of a little bit of water with pepper flakes steeped in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I spray it down, and it kills the flies immediately, but they, from what I gather, they lay the eggs into the soil, and then the soil eats the roots of the plant, or the little larva eat the roots of the plant,
yeah.
And then they end up dying. And I wondered what the flies are and if there's a quicker way I can kill the little larva that are eating at the roots.
Okay. I'm almost certain that what you've got is fungus gnats. And basically what they do is the maggots of these, you know, flies eat the fungus down, and they can also eat the roots of the plants themselves, as you indicated. There are certain poisons that you can use, but one of the things that I've heard of recently is taking potato slices and putting the potato slices onto the surface of the container, and then the maggots will move to the potato slices, and then you can actually, you know, put the potato slices there, have the maggots move to them, and move them off. Another thing that I've heard of using, I don't know exactly how effective it is that we were talking about neem before. I was saying that I didn't know exactly how safe it was, but for something like this, I think that neem might be a good application, so you could actually spray your neem around the base of the container, and that might help you out. And it may just be a matter of you taking that spray that you have and just applying it very frequently over the course of a few weeks and just hopefully knocking your population down. Fungus gnats are difficult to control, and even in commercial greenhouses where they're using all these nasty chemicals, sometimes they just can't get control of them.
Right. I've gotten them from the plant stores also.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
All right. And neem is a pesticide.
Neem is a pesticide, and what you'll see on the... Every pesticide has a list of active ingredients. So what you're going to what you're going to want to look at is the active ingredients on the label of the pesticides, and you're going to see neem, or you may see something like clarified extract of neem oil, which is going to be the same thing.
Okay.
Cindy, thanks very much. Appreciate hearing from you. Good luck to you. We did have a caller who wanted to know how to control potato bugs. If that were your problem, what would you do?
Well, once upon a time, there was a BT, and I'm assuming that he means Colorado potato beetle.
I believe so.
Yeah. Once upon a time, there was a BT, or Bacillus thuringiensis formulation, that was available called Bacillus thuringiensis varietes inebrianus. And hopefully we'll see that again, and that is what I would use if I could get to it. It's very safe and very effective. If you can't find that, and chances are right now that you won't be able to find it, then you're probably going to have to move to synthetic pesticides to get good control, which is unfortunate. The active ingredients that are probably going to give you the best control include carbaryl and permethrin. Other than that, there aren't a whole lot of things that are going to protect them. You could use... you could use what's called a floating row cover. Remay is a type of floating row cover, which you put over your plants, and that can protect them. It physically prevents the beetles from getting to the plants to lay eggs while still letting through quite a bit of light, so the plants do all right. That's Remay.
Mm-hmm.
You might consider that.
All right. Kent in Green Bay, let's go ahead with you.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about the girl who called in about the plumeria that she has.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have a plumeria and some other indoor plants. And what I've done to keep insects away from those things is, I'm sure you've heard of this, Jeff, but I just spray them with like a stream on like a water sprayer.
Sure. I think that that's a great idea. In fact, it's an excellent idea. But with scale, once scale establishes itself, it's very difficult to do that. However, if you do that before the scale establishes itself, you could actually, you know, really reduce your problem if you're doing that, you know, right along.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a great suggestion.
And actually,
go ahead.
And actually, the caller said that the plant is in a state of dormancy right now.
Yeah.
So all the leaves had fallen off, and that's actually the best time to spray it down. Well, it's worked with me, but the scale does seem to come back like every now and then. So it's like a temporary thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion. And that's why I said oil. When the leaves aren't on the plant, is the time the plant can handle the most stress, like spraying it down, the oil, whatever. So great point.
I'll try the oil thing. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, yeah. Kent, thank you very much for your call. And if you'd like to join in, we will have a line open for you in Madison at 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Our next caller, Jeff, is from Karen in Chippewa Falls. Hi, right. Karen.
Hi. I have a question about getting a natural pesticide, I guess, for mosquito larvae. We have a low spot in our garden, which is mostly clay. And when it rains, the water will stay there, which I've got bog plants in there now, and even a frog or two will come. But then it will eventually dry up. And I've heard that there is some sort of bacteria that I could put in this area that would discourage or kill the mosquito larva.
Absolutely. I love it when people ask questions that I can give a really good answer to, and you just asked one. Product called Mosquito Dunks, I believe it is. It's a type of Bacillus thuringiensis. I keep mentioning this, but the BT, it's called Bacillus thuringiensis. The variety is Israeliensis. Not that that really matters. You can buy it at just about any garden center, and you put it into the standing water, and it will kill the mosquito larvae, and it's going to do a great job. You will need to reapply it every time that this particular area fills up, and if the area never stops filling up, if it stays wet the whole season, you will need to reapply the mosquito dunks or whatever your variety of Bacillus thuringiensis, Israeliensis. It can be put into the water a variety of ways, but you will need to reapply that every few weeks.
Jeff, is that D-U-N-K-S?
I believe so. In fact, you know, I should probably look it up to make sure I'm giving the right thing.
We could do that during the news, that you could check that out.
That sounds good, but the key is to look at the active ingredients. And the active ingredient that you want is Bacillus thuringiensis variety Israeliensis, as in the country Israel, Israeliensis.
That would not hurt any of the little frogs or something that would come in, because the birds like that area too.
The nice thing about this pesticide is it is specific for fly larvae.
Okay.
It will kill fly larvae and fly larvae only.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Karen, good luck. Thanks very much for the call. And on to Roger in Iowa County. Roger, what can we do for you?
Hi, a question or comment on mulching. I'm a real fan of lasagna gardening.
All right.
Okay, you are too. Okay.
I am. Do you know, have you read Lee Reich's book, Weed Free Gardening?
Yes.
It is the best.
Okay. My question or comment is, one, I'm not afraid to use old hay or old straw, which has weed seeds, because if weeds are coming up, your mulch isn't thick enough, is my opinion. Wonder what you thought. But my question is, with lasagna gardening or mulching in the fall, a number of people say, and I think Lee said it, you know, well, the ground isn't going to warm up soon enough in the spring. My question, and I didn't get the berry thermometers this year, was, mulch also insulates the ground from cooling. So do you know of any research on mulch's effect of keeping the ground from getting cool or warming in the spring?
What it's going to do is it's going to mitigate the temperature. So it's actually going to keep the ground a little bit cooler as we get into the spring. And then, you know, as you get into the fall, it'll keep it warmer for a little while. In terms of weed seeds, you know, lasagna gardening is one of the best things that you can do. And for those who don't know what lasagna gardening is, it's basically keeping an area of ground that you don't till at all. Or you might have tilled it the first year that you had a garden, but after that you don't till. and you keep mulch on the top, and then every year you continually add mulch, and this new mulch controls weeds while the old mulch rots and helps to keep your fertility in your garden high. This isn't necessarily the best way to produce crops by farmers. A lot of people think farmers should use this, but there are a lot of practical reasons that it doesn't work for a farmer. But for a small to medium-sized garden, this is just the best way to garden. It doesn't completely control weeds, and you will get some weed seed from the hay, but it tends to be really reduced because of the heavy layer of mulch that you have on the top. And I mentioned that book in the beginning of this discussion. For anybody out there interested in this type of gardening, Lee Reich's book, Weed-Free Gardening, I believe is its title, is just the best book out there on this.
And his name is R-E-I-C-H, Lee Reich. We've had him on before, and I'm sure we'll have him on again as well. We're going to pause and catch up on the latest news. Jeff, sit tight, and Mike, Jesse, and Patricia will get to your questions as we roll along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 11 o'clock, and I'm Jim Packard, sitting in on Garden Talk for Larry Mueller. And we're talking today with Jeff Gilman of Maplewood, Minnesota, and associate professor in the Department of Horticultural Sciences at the University of Minnesota. He researches plant production, teaches courses on nursery management and pesticide use, is the author of a very popular book, The Truth About Garden Remedies, What Works, What Doesn't, and Why. It's published by the Timber Press. Whether in ancient books, on television or radio, in gardening publications, remedies for all of your garden woes are there for the taking, and the challenge is to know what will work and what won't. Jeff Gilman assesses new and historic advice and reveals the how and why, sometimes the why not, for more than 100 common and uncommon gardening practices, and the results will surprise even the most experienced gardeners in our audience. More with Jeff Gilman coming up after the news from National Public Radio in Washington. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Been enjoying being on for Larry this week. He, of course, will return on Monday just in time to greet Santa as Santa shows up for an annual program of talking to listeners' children. So that's Monday ahead on the Ideas Network with Larry Mueller. Again, we're talking with Jeff Gilman, the Mythbuster when it comes to garden remedies. And Jeff, thanks again for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me,
Jim. It's a real pleasure to have you here. Let's go back to the phones. If you'd like to join in, the number in Madison, 263-1890, toll-free at 800-642-1234. If you're just joining us, we've been talking in the last hour about Miracle-Gro, George Washington's use of herbs as a liner in his garden, as a repellent, watering cans and the oxygenation of plants. We've got fertilizers, marigolds, mulch, spent grains in the garden, neem oil, and so much more. So if you have questions about garden remedies that you've heard about or using, then give us a call at 263-1890 in Madison or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Patricia has been waiting the longest in Madison, so Patricia, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier in the program, your guest had mentioned to a woman about using sawdust as mulch, and I think I had always heard that using fresh sawdust depletes the soil of nitrogen because of its decomposition process.
You're absolutely correct. The question is the degree to which you're depleting nitrogen from the soil. If you are planting plants right now and you put down sawdust, what will happen is that you will deplete nitrogen in the top inch or two of the soil, and you could hurt your plant. So that's absolutely true. If you have a more established plant with deeper roots, then it's actually an excellent mulch because what it does is it depletes the soil of nitrogen near the top, and then weed seeds can't germinate. So you helped me clarify that quite a bit.
May I ask another question?
Yes, go ahead.
A couple of months ago, I had bought a beautiful Phalaenopsis orchid. And about a month or so after I had it, I noticed on the underside of these thick leaves were some black spots, like a mold. Mm-hmm. And I took a very dilute bleach solution and wiped it over those spots, and then I took fresh water and went over them again. and they have been fine now. And I don't know, what would your opinion be on using that?
If it doesn't hurt the plant, then I think that it's good.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Patricia, thanks very much. We appreciate your call. And on to Mike in Poplar. Mike, what's on your mind today?
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I was wondering, Jeff, are you familiar with Jerry Baker?
Oh, yes.
I was wondering a couple of his concoctions that he promotes. The one I was wondering about was soaking chewing tobacco in warm water and taking that dilution and spraying it on your plants to ward off and kill bugs.
I can talk to that. Yes. The amount of chewing tobacco that he generally recommends, and it depends on his publication exactly how much he recommends, is generally about a half a handful of chewing tobacco, I believe in a gallon of water. Now, compare that amount of tobacco with what they used when it really mattered, back in the 1880s, 1890s, even the early 1900s, which would be approximately a pound of tobacco per gallon of water. The amount that he generally recommends is not sufficient to control insects. And if you end up adding the amount that you need to add to control insects, if you get that spray on yourself, you can actually give yourself a bit of a nicotine high, which isn't really very healthy. So, yeah, I mentioned this earlier in the show. I really don't recommend using chewing tobacco as a control. Can it control insects? Well, yes. It's dangerous for you too, though.
Okay, how about he mixes beer and shampoo and Listerine and...
Okay, I can talk to all of those because I've actually experimented with all of them. Beer is a pretty bad idea. You see, beer has alcohol in it, and alcohol does not agree with plants at all. Now, you can use an alcohol-free beer, which I've, by the way, also used. And what you find is that the carbohydrates in the alcohol-free beer cause growth of soil microorganisms. The problem is it doesn't stimulate growth of soil microorganisms that are necessarily good for the plant. So stay away from beer. There is some argument that shampoo might be beneficial, but most of the research shows that it's generally not. Where it would be beneficial is if you've got a ground that is really doesn't like water and tends to shrug water off instead of taking it up. The shampoo actually helps the water to get into the soil profile. Not something you generally need in the conditions that you're going to have in Minnesota, Wisconsin, or most of the listening area.
And let's tell people who Jerry Baker is if they do not know, and many people probably will not know. The last time that I was aware of him, he was in the Detroit area and offering up his variety of home remedies.
Yes, he produces a whole lot of home remedies, and I can't say that none of his things work, because I have tried some of his things that do work, but I've tried more of his things that have failed badly.
Mm-hmm. And Jerry Baker is not a trained horticulturalist.
Not to my knowledge, he is not. My understanding is that he's a retired police officer.
Right. So we're talking about the same Jerry Baker.
Yes.
Thanks very much, Mike. We appreciate your call. And let's go to Jesse in Madison. Hello, Jesse.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Of course.
I can. Yep.
Okay. Do I need to turn up the phone?
No, you don't.
Okay, great. I have a two-part question, if I'm allowed. The second one will be
short.
The first one, I used to do a lot more gardening than I have the time to do now. And I've heard so many comments on oils, pepper sprays, soaps, all of those things. And, not only do they always have a very temporary or no effect at all, but you're kind of, I quickly learned that you're fighting a losing battle.
Yeah.
I mean, by trying those, what you've done is you've taken an organism out of its ecosystem and tried to make it grow. And if one thing gets in, one bad component gets in, you have no way to fight it except using all these chemicals and soaps and everything.
We call it an endless cycle. Yes.
Endless cycle. Yeah, vicious. It's a downward spiral for sure.
Yeah.
And with oils, especially, I've had horrible luck with those. They do a great job of smothering scale and bugs, but they also do a great job of smothering the plant. And if you're using any kind of artificial lighting, the oils can actually amplify the infrared and just, you know, wipe out your plant in a matter of hours. So, you know, one thing that is rarely mentioned is predator bug. And mm-hmm. I've tried these with great success on aphids and spider
bugs. May I ask which predator bugs you tried?
Well, it depended on what I was trying to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, it also depends on the humidity of your environment, the temperature of your environment. And so there's, you know, if you get on the Internet, there's all kinds of different bugs available.
I actually cover this in the book that I already have out and the next book as well. There are certain predator bugs that I think the world of, and then there are certain predator bugs that you bring in and they leave. And this particularly in an outdoor garden. If you've got an indoor garden, boy, add the predator bugs. They're great. They're going to stick around. But if it's outdoors, for example, buying lady beetles, there is no research that doesn't show that lady beetles are a good thing to buy. Lady beetles are a lousy thing to buy in an outdoor environment because they actually are predisposed to flying sometimes between 1 and 5 miles from, you know, application. On the other hand, you've got the big-eyed bug and the minute pirate bug, which are just fantastic, and I think the world of them, and they do a great job. Part of the problem that I find, and you sound like you're well-educated, you know when a problem's starting, you know when to apply these things. A lot of times, I'll see a novice gardener wait until a population is just beyond control and then add their predator bugs, and it just may not do anything at all because it's so far gone.
All right, Jesse, thanks very much for the call. Your level is very soft, so we're going to move on to another caller. Did have an emailer from Appleton who relates to your doctorate in horticulture and master's in entomology by asking, what's the effect of diatomaceous earth on exoskeletons of insects?
Diatomaceous earth works well at scraping off the exoskeleton of an insect, and basically, all insects have a wax coating around them. And if you scrape off this wax coating, the insect will dry up. So diatomaceous earth works really well at taking off the exoskeleton of an insect. It works better for soft-bodied insects than it does for hard-bodied insects. In other words, it's not nearly as effective on beetles as it is on, say, a silverfish crawling across the ground.
Mm-hmm. Norman in Wausau, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
Jeff, I have two questions for you. One is on spider mites and the other is on whiteflies.
Okay.
For the spider mites, I usually spray Savvy on my orchard trees at the pink stage, but what I find is mid-August about, both the plum trees and the apple trees start getting the spider mites back. Is there anything good to control them at that time?
Well, actually, I'm going to go back to the last caller and say, for spider mites, it may be... they may be bad for a year, but I would stop spraying for spider mites. And the reason is that what you have to spray for spider mites to control them is so toxic that you're just killing all your beneficials. And that's the reason that the spider mites are coming back, is that because you've sprayed once, you've killed all your beneficials, and now they're just going to come back on you.
Would that apply to the your other, like, Imidan? Would that destroy them too or not? Imidan?
Imidan. Well, first of all, you're spraying 7 for spider mites?
No. I was spraying Savvy, which is supposed to be selective. It acts also as a inhibitor of the hatching of the eggs.
I'm not... do you know the active ingredient on that? Is it spelled...
I can give it to you right here.
Yeah, what is it?
Savvy is the trade name.
Right.
And the actual chemical name is... Hexathiazox.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about now.
That's trans 5-4 chloral.
Yeah, no,
cycle goes on and on.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it now. I'm familiar with it now. Savvy is going to work on your spider mites, and it is reasonably selective. But if you start applying it, you're probably going to need to keep applying it. Imidan is not going to be particularly effective against your spider mites. And I don't actually recommend, especially for a homeowner, I don't really recommend using Imidan.
Well, that was not for the spider mites. That was for the apple maggots.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that's, yes. You need something to control apple maggot, and that will definitely work. An option, well, we had a caller earlier talk about using his bucket of banana peel and vinegar, and I had indicated that I wasn't the biggest fan of that, but there is actually an organic method that I am fond of, and I don't want to say that you shouldn't use Imidan for apple maggot because I know how tough it is, and I know that to get good fruit, oftentimes you have to use a spray. So I'm not saying you're wrong, but I do want to give people an option from the chemicals if they want one, and that is, it's called a lad trap, and it's those, you might have seen them, red balls that you hang from the tree, and you put tacky paste onto these red balls, and the apple maggots will actually be attracted to those red balls and fly to them and get stuck, and you can significantly reduce your problem with apple maggot with that. For controlling the spider mites, you know, here's a thought, and you know, take it as intended. I'd go a year without applying the Savvy, and then see what happens the following year. And if you feel the spider mites are getting bad the following year, you may need to apply it. But I'd give it a year before I wrote it off, because that's the kind of compound you are going to put yourself in a vicious cycle.
Okay. How about the white flies?
White flies on apple trees, are you sure that they're bad enough that they're really affecting?
These were on tomatoes and my raspberry plants.
Okay. I talked about floating row covers before, and I think that I'd try that if I were you, and that's use the Remay and some stuff you put over top of them, which may block the white flies from ever getting to them. Other than that, the soap, insecticidal soap, can work quite well on them, and I think I'd go that route. Would be my preference. If you can't, if you feel you have to spray something, permethrin is probably a good spray for you.
Good luck, Norman. Thanks very much for the call. The number in Madison is 263-1890, and we're toll-free at 800-642-1234 as we continue our conversation with Jeff Gilman of the University of Minnesota. He is the author of The Truth About Garden Remedies, What Works, What Doesn't, and Why, published by the Timber Press. Bob in Mount Horeb is next. Hello, Bob.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Thanks for the program. I'm burdened with a knowledge of chemistry,
uh-huh.
And I wanted to get back to your home remedy for, I think, aphids, where you mentioned palm olive as a detergent or a soap to use as an insecticidal soap.
Sure, you can.
One thing to be aware of with the dishwashing soaps and the laundry soaps is that the actual formulation is market availability.
Mm-hmm.
So they may go from like a carbon 16 lengths to a carbon 19 lengths mm-hmm. fatty acid.
Right.
And those different chemicals have different activities on the exoskeleton of the insect.
And on the plant itself.
And on the plant. So I you know, as far as a home remedy goes, I don't know that I would recommend the dishwashing soap or the laundry soap, just because it's an unknown chemical. And may not be as effective as what you buy on the shelf, which is a consistent, I think, a C18 fatty acid.
Well, I try to be consistent in recommending, and I'm not going to disagree with you at all. I try to be consistent in recommending the insecticidal soaps, but some people want the home-brewed remedies. I think that the home-brewed remedies, I agree that they're not as nearly as predictable as the insecticidal soaps, and that's why you've got to be careful if you're going to use them and testing them. But I'm not going to disagree with you at all, because they do differ from year to year, formulation to formulation, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
All right. Bob, thank you very much. And let's go to Julia in Green Bay. Hi, Julia.
Hi. How are you?
Very good. Thanks.
I've got a question about thistles. I have, I'm not a gardener, but I apparently have no problem with growing thistles in my backyard. I think one of my neighbors may have put out bird food that the birds took and sat on the fence, and I have a full thistle patch, and I don't know how to get rid of them. I've tried digging them out. I put muriatic pool acid on them, which gets rid of them. They burn up immediately, but not apparently not the roots.
Right. Well, to get rid of something like thistle, you're probably going to need to go synthetic if you're not willing to apply like vinegar again and again and again. And, you know, you have to decide, make this decision. If you're not willing to apply vinegar again and again and again or something else, and muriatic acid is, you know, that's just going to kill the tops, then you're probably going to, you know, Roundup, or the active ingredient in Roundup is glyphosate. That's probably what you're going to end up using, and it'll work well.
But it'll take everything around it, too.
Yes, it will.
Right. Now, the garden center recommended putting out preen in the spring, early in the spring.
Maybe.
I'm willing to try anything.
I'm sorry to give you that maybe, but I think that maybe is the best you're going to kind of get with that. You could also try, there's a compound, and it is, you'll find it in, I think it's called oxalis killer or clover killer. It has an active ingredient called triclopyr. That may work.
I feel like the muriatic acid almost became a fertilizer because I would get rid of it in one spot, but it would appear somewhere else
that
it had never been.
Yeah, I'll just put it this way. It's not going to provide complete control, and that's really the only thing I can say about it. You could try, you know, the thistle is going to grow up taller than most of your other stuff. You could actually try wiping your Roundup on it. You know, and there's a product, it's called Vinex, which has triclopyr, and you could actually use this Vinex. It comes with a brush-on applicator, and you could actually brush it on your thistles, and that might be an easier way for you to get rid of it.
Are the roots like a underground? Do they grow along the, you know, are they, what's that name? It starts with an R.
Rhizome? Yeah. Ooh, you're asking me something I don't know. I don't believe they are, but having said that, they could be. I just don't know.
Julia, thanks very much for the call. Good luck to you this spring. And let's go to Ryan in Madison. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. See, I have a large ficus tree. It's probably about 8 feet high.
Sure.
And,
indoor?
And, indoor, yes. And someone told me it has scale, which I think it is. It was sapping all over everything, and everything was sticky on the floor. So I've sprayed it and sprayed it and sprayed it. And it's good for about a week, and it just keeps coming back. And everyone's telling me just get rid of the tree. But it's, you know, obviously a nice big tree, and it still looks really good.
Right.
I mean, put stuff in the soil even, and it still seems to keep coming back. Is it scale or?
Probably it is scale. Probably.
Okay.
And I would say that the recommendations that I gave to the woman earlier are probably the same as I'd give you, and that is try the cotton ball with isopropyl alcohol, wipe it on the scales, wait a couple of days, and see how it works. And remember to do just one spot at a time, just in case you're getting damage on the plant. If that doesn't work, there are certain pesticides, which are synthetic and can be quite dangerous, that may work for you.
Okay.
All right, Ryan, thanks very much. And Babette, I think you're getting the last call in Kenosha. Hi.
Oh, thank you.
Hi.
I enjoyed your book, by the way. I read it. It was good.
Thank you.
And I have two dwarf apple trees that I wrapped this year with Remy to control the bugs.
Right.
And I didn't know if that anybody else had ever thought of that or if that was something.
Honestly, I've never heard of wrapping an apple tree with Remy, but I think that's an awesome idea.
It actually worked, but the one problem I had is some of the leaves got a little, like maybe heat damaged, a little brown.
That doesn't surprise me.
So I didn't know if there was a certain type that would not have so much heat buildup.
Remay is about as good as it gets. It may have been a heat buildup. It may have been a reaction to something else. Honestly, from what I would doubt that you would get enough damage that it would actually hurt the tree, even though it may look unsightly. It doesn't seem likely to me that there would be enough damage that it would actually hurt the tree.
Babette, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks very much, Jeff, for being with us today and spending time, and we'll look forward to talking with you early in 2008 about your new book on organic gardening.
It was great being on, Jim. Thanks to you, and thanks for all the calls. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Jeff Gilman of Maplewood, Minnesota, associate professor at the University of Minnesota and the author of The Truth About Garden Remedies, What Works, What Doesn't, and Why. Sarah Carroll on air production today. Thanks very much. On Monday, Larry's back with Santa Claus and one of his elves here on the Ideas Network.